Next question actually came from Senegal. So Monica Southworth is in Senegal this month, and she called in because she was wondering about the energy-efficient lights that were recently installed, the street lights. She said that she encountered a community that was using LEDs and was saving ridiculous amounts of money and wanted to know if the energy-efficient lights recently installed here are LEDs and if you've considered switching to those because they're significantly more efficient and last longer than other types.
Yes, we are. We have a couple that we're testing out, and the electric department is working to I know they had a problem with fasteners and the wind blowing them around, so they're having to change some of the fasteners out to hold them. But so far they're working, and they do use a lot less power.
So if it turns out that they are good and aren't going to blow away, will you be changing most of the streetlights to LEDs?
I imagine we'll come up with a plan to steadily change them out, slowly but surely. I'd have to check with the electric department to see what the plan is next. I think they had two, and one of them is on the walkway by PCR. I don't know where the other one was located, but apparently they are saving quite a bit of money.
Okay, great. And if anyone else would like to call in from someplace a little bit closer than Senegal, the number is 581-2161. Add some more questions because, you know, we're plowing through these pretty quick. Okay, all right. Last year, the Energy Committee proposed funding energy-efficient lights and appliances for residents and businesses to reduce their power usage. Instead of just having a welfare handout of $60 per month or $720 per year, council and staff propose rebates like most other power suppliers for energy-efficient appliances and heating systems?
That's a council decision, yes.
Yeah, they could do anything they could do anything they wanted.
The city has been systematically doing energy audits, and like we upgraded the lighting at the school, and I guess they're supposedly saving money. When we do the PCR, the lights will be changed out. We've looked at changing lights out in the warehouse, so we're going through each one of the facilities and going to more energy-efficient lighting. There's lots of information on the web about what you can do as a homeowner to save money. And I suspect that a lot of people are doing that. I know I've changed my light bulbs out. They're a little, compact fluorescents are okay in general areas for reading. They're kind of hard, but we've been changing ours out.
Okay. Another energy question. What do you think about wind power in the community? Kodiak is doing very well in developing their potential, and the geothermal project does not appear to be going anywhere. Why isn't the city trying out wind?
Well, I guess take a look at the small wind projects that are going on here. Mike Daniels is the only one that's survived so far, and I think the other ones have pretty much failed at this point. I don't know. Do you know of any?
Well, the two Helix ones were damaged in the windstorm that knocked over the crane.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying again, and they've replaced the blades. And the one up on Nirvana was only slightly damaged, and it was actually still operational. He just took it down to fix it.
Right.
So, you know, it's getting...
I think I predicted this some many months ago, that wind manufacturers testing a windmill in a tunnel at 80 miles an hour is very different from actual conditions out here where the wind changes direction quickly, the wind shear that takes place here, et cetera. So, you know, you're talking about a $20 million. When we looked at this before, there was a $20 million investment. Just the depreciation alone is $1 million a year on that investment. And I think we had wind available 15% of the time. So what you actually saved at the price per fuel then was $250,000 a year. But your maintenance was even more than that. So at this point, unless we can get some fairly efficient machines for a lot less money, we're not there right now.
Well, you know, it's also the topography. I mean, anybody who's out there who's ever seen a wind farm, you've seen them. They're on a plain or they're on a ridge top, like in Kodiak, where there's a constant, steady flow of wind, because, you know, we need, we're talking 20, you know, megawatts of power to provide for everybody in the city, and I'm including the processors on that if they tied in. And it's just an enormous amount of power. You'd still have to have your powerhouse on all the time, because when the wind stops blowing, you still need to cook your dinner and have your lights and have your computer be on. So simply because it's such a huge scale, and when you look at there's nobody that's got a machine that large that's going to warranty it for 100, you know, something that took out the APL crane, you can imagine what it could do to, you know, several huge towers with their long blades. So it, you know, I hope it works for the folks in this community, the residents who tried it for their homes, for the smaller helixes. I think that is great. But on a large scale, it just couldn't make it work, couldn't make it make sense.
Okay. Sticking with the topic of energy, have any power sales agreements been finalized between the city and any large industrial users? If not, why are we buying so many engines from the powerhouse?
The connection between long-term power sales agreements and engines, I don't understand what the connection is. If you need the power, you need the power. And a long-term power sales agreement implies that you're going to give somebody a deal and on a take-or-pay basis. So if you're working for a fish processing company, and would you enter into a 20-year agreement for power? And if you're not in business 5 years from now, you have to pay off 15 years of that agreement? I don't think they would be interested in that.
But the needs for the power exist right now that the city's putting in with a new Clusterboard project and with just all of the needs for the community. So we don't have to be buying a more expensive power from Unice to provide as well. This powerhouse and these new Wartzillas are really going to do the job, and every kilowatt is going to be used at this point.
Okay. Is the city even trying to have any power sales agreements with any of the industrial users?
Nope.
No, the city's not pursuing that in any way?
Well, no. We need the third engine now, and they'll be paying the industrial rate or whatever rate, whoever the customer is, what their rate is. Right now, I think Westward wants a megawatt interruptible. Horizon Lines wants more power. APL wants more power. Clusterboard wants power. And so that's why we need to put in the third engine now.
Okay. Going with the same energy theme, we've just had a call in. Do you have an update on the McCushion Geothermal Energy Project?
Yeah, I had a meeting with the folks from Jack Wood, KSLC, down in California recently to try to talk to them about buying them out. And we had an appraisal for a certain amount of money. And they wanted an exorbitant amount of money for the property. So discussion sort of fell apart because they were at $36 million and we were at $1 million. And they promised to give us a proposal shortly after the first of the year. And they wrote us a letter and said, we're not going to give you a proposal. So it's pretty much not sure about Mr. Wood's land at this juncture and trying to figure out Plan B.
Previously, Plan B involved using Aleut Corporation land. How is that going anywhere?
Right now, we're not in discussions with them.
Okay.
Not because we're not interested or we're not trying, but because we have not had a positive response from the Aleut Corporation at this time. So we are still working on it. I think, you know, people just want to know that the city is still trying to figure out if that this project is feasible and if it's going to work in the future, because it's just such an amazing project. And the roadblocks without any land use issues are enormous. It's a really complex, expensive project. But then when you start to throw in a landowner from California who's unreasonable, and then another landowner that it's difficult to come to an agreement with. You know, you don't give up, and you just try to find another way to get that positive reaction. And so the city is definitely going to try to continue to do that.
So at this stage in the game, you have money to do some exploratory drilling. How quickly do you need some sort of agreement in place before you can make those plans? I mean, would it still be feasible to do that this summer?
Not without that agreement. And that's been the hang-up with the Aleut Corporation. Wanted us to just sign an agreement that said, yeah, you can go on our land and explore, and we'll talk about the price later. And that's just not the way you do a geothermal project. You got to know what the price of the fluid will be up front, because the fluid is not for free, no matter who owns it. So you're displacing diesel fuel, but you have to buy the fluid. And that's been a dispute with Mr. Wood since day one.
So is there any sort of timeline date that you would have to have a firm agreement in place with any of the parties?
Before you'd go drill?
Yeah.
We'd want to have something in place by April at the latest.
Okay. So maybe something could happen this year?
We hope so.
We'll
we really, I hope so. It's just, you know, this is just a question that just needs to be answered. We know there's one well up there that was drilled in 1982, and it's not a proven well. A proven well is something that you test the steam, the put out for a full solid year, and to be sure that it's going to be able to provide the energy before you start sinking, you know, $80, $90, $100 million into the project. So it's really important to try to do that. But again, if we could find the resource down off the mountain and down closer to the shoreline, you could take tens of millions of dollars off the project, make it more feasible. So I'm really hopeful that we can move forward with this and get some questions answered and get in there and just kind of drill some in some different areas.
All right. Sticking on the topic of environmental things, if recycling efforts in the past reduced landfill usage by 17 to 20%, when will the city consider using its existing Baylor recycling facility at the landfill?
The recycling, I don't believe ever recycled 17%, because just the residential waste is less than 8% of the landfill stream. So I'm not sure where that...
I think a lot of that came from fiber. The recycling group, they were sending out fiber for the seafood plants and the vessels when they would start, you know, they'd stop, they'd use another type of fiber. They just couldn't warehouse it any longer.
Fiber?
Boxes for fish, crab, what have you. And they would donate it to the recycling center, and in return, Sealand was donating the shipping of the fiber down to where it could be recycled. So when it came down to it, Sealand finally said, you know what, this is a lot of money. A lot of containers that we're shipping out, we're not going to do it for free anymore because you guys are making good money. So, you know, we're going to charge for the vans. And that's when it stopped really making money. So what happened was the processors took it over themselves when the council made some changes. You know, good things happen out of the discussion on the recycling. No, the city didn't start a recycling program, but the information that was gained was really valuable and allowed administration and Department of Utilities and the council to look at different ways. You know, how are we going to treat this landfill differently so we don't have this problem in the future and we can move things out? And one of the things they thought of was, well, we're just not going to make it inexpensive to dump, you know, your fiber, your recyclables, primarily cardboard and steel at the landfill. We want it off the island. So that's what's happened with Westward, Alyeska, and Seafood, Alyeska, Unice. They all recycle regularly. Their fiber out and their steel out. They're putting just basically organic matter into the landfill to a large degree. So there's always new things that can be done, you know, bit by bit, step by step. And I think that the council in the last few years has really moved a tremendous way.
All right. Well, surprisingly, our half an hour has already zoomed past. I'd like to thank you both for joining me today. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anne.